Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning and welcome to 95.7 The Game, where alongside Lorenzo Neal and Dan Dibley, I'm Joe Fortenbaugh. Great to have you in today as we get set for a conversation with Joe Theismann at 8:15 and 12-year NFL veteran Brian Baldinger at 8:30. We've got Green Day tickets to give away at 8:45, and we've got your phone calls on Michael Vick, Colin Kaepernick, Shannon Sharp, and all things NFL, 888-957-9570. But before we get to all of that, as always, here's Dibs with your update.
White Sox and Yankees swing a big trade. It's a bold move as the Yankees acquire first baseman Todd Frazier, the closer David Robertson, and Tommy Canley from Chicago. In exchange, they send one of their big prospects, Blake Rutherford, to a White Sox team that already is chock full of prospects. Tyler Clifford goes in the deal as well. Also, a couple of minor leaguers from New York to the White Sox organization. In other moves, the Tigers send J.D. Martinez to Arizona for three minor leaguers. The trade deadline comes up in 12 days' time. Story number two, the Giants could be active at the deadline, and they were active last night in extra innings.
On the ground, and this one is over. So the Giants won it in the 10th inning.
That's Dwayne Kuiper from NBC Sports. Bay Area, the call, 2-1 the final. Eduardo Nunez, the base hit to win it. Sam Dyson gets his first win as a Giant. Matt Cain was slated to head to the bullpen, but he gets the start as Johnny Cueto's on the DL with blister issues. Story number three, the A's fall to Tampa, 4-3. Santiago Casilla gave up a couple of two-out singles in the ninth. Chris Smith was looking for his first win since 2008. Sonny Gray gets the ball today. Oakland showcasing the right-hander ahead of the deadline. 11:45 dugout show, 12:35 first pitch here on 95.7 The Game. The update brought to you by the Streets of Brentwood. Don't miss the Streets of Brentwood back-to-school event Friday from 5 to 7. Visit shopstreetsofbrentwood.com for details. I'm Dan Dibley on your home of the NBA champion Golden State Warriors. It's 95.7 The Game.
Thanks, Dibs. Doobie in Los Angeles, I'm going to borrow your text from the PenskeAutoSales.com text line. I'm going to turn it in to a conversation for a moment here. If you're the Raiders, who would you rather have as your backup quarterback this season, Connor Cook or Colin Kaepernick?
Colin Kaepernick. I think when you look at him, you look at the experience. Guys have been to an NFC Championship game, played in a Super Bowl. He understands his role here. He knows he can't beat out Carr, and he knows that Carr is a better quarterback than him. I think that this guy would be in line. The biggest thing is, how would Crabtree feel? But far as who would be better, that would get you more wins if something were to happen to Carr, by far it's Colin Kaepernick.
Because we saw this situation play out last season.
Yeah.
Carr gets injured late. Yeah. The hopes evaporate and go out the window. Not to blame Connor Cook for that.
No, I totally agree.
He was a rookie. He had no experience whatsoever. What happened in Houston would have happened to anyone in that situation. That is a great defense, and it is a tough spot. But if you find yourself in that spot, who would you rather have? A young guy like Connor Cook, Dibs, or Colin Kaepernick?
I think a young guy like Connor Cook, maybe, but not Connor Cook. Because what we saw in Week 17 in the playoff game is that he's just not ready. If you had a younger player who was more ready, more adept, then maybe. But you got to love having an experienced backup, a guy who's been in a championship game. Let's say last year happens again where, God forbid, Derek Carr gets hurt in Week 16. If you had Colin Kaepernick there, you could at least say, well, look, this guy's been there. He's played in the Super Bowl, for crying out loud. He may not be the most accurate, but he's a guy who has experience in these kind of big games.
He might have got you to the AFC Championship game, and then Carr would have been able to return. Probably wouldn't have beaten New England, but you have a better chance of beating New England with Carr. But if you could have had a guy that gets you through a couple weeks till you got to the big game, he could have been that guy.
888-957-9570. Reggie in Philadelphia on Michael Vick. Colin Kaepernick, Shannon Sharp. Reggie, thanks for calling the show. Go ahead.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back, Joe. Listen, I think what Shannon Sharpe said was spot on. It was spot on. The only problem with what he said is he's not sitting in the owner's box. I think we're being a little bit hard on Mike Vick because could it have been that he was just trying to get a subtle insight into what these NFL owners think? Because at the end of the day, that's all that matters. We may not agree with it. I don't agree with it. Shannon doesn't agree with it. But we're not the ones signing the check and signing these players. So when you look at Colin Kaepernick, is he better than a lot of these quarterbacks, Sanchez, Fitzpatrick, Glennon? Absolutely. But the fact of the matter is, still, his skills have been on a steady decline. That's not to say that he's not better than these guys, but his skills have been on a decline. So when these owners look at him, that's strike one. Strike two was his protest. When he did that, he alienated himself from these billionaire, white, conservative NFL owners. That's like striking a chord at their heart. So when you look at these two strikes, could it be that Mike Vick was just saying, listen, when these guys look at you, they prejudge you. Is it wrong? Yes. But when they look at your stance and your appearance, they see a rebel. They see the afro. They see the tattoos. They see a rebel, someone who's rebelling against their system. So in order to try and quench that a little bit, maybe you should cut your hair and change your image and just show that you're trying to conform. Because at the end of the day, you have to play their game. We know how these NFL owners operate. They pick and they make their own rules. If they want to overlook one guy's transgression and another guy who may have done something that wasn't wrong, like Colin Kaepernick, and they want to blackball him, they do that. They make the rules. These NFL owners are billionaire owners with egos that go on ego trips and power trips. They do what they want. So you got to kind of play their game. Is it wrong? Absolutely. Is it unfair? Absolutely. But if he wants to play football, he's going to have to play their game. And that's the unfortunate thing. That's the thing we haven't got past. And it won't change until we get someone who looks and thinks like Shannon Sharpe in the owner's box. Thanks, guys.
Great, great phone call, Reggie. You've had a lot of good ones. That may be your best. Lo, you've been around the game long enough. As an analyst, as a member of the media, but more specifically as a 16-year veteran who went to 4 Pro Bowls, I'd imagine you've had some conversation with owners. I'd imagine you've had some conversations with players and coaches who have had conversations with owners. What Reggie's saying, how does that land for you?
I think he's spot on. I can go further than that. My wife, she worked for the Spanos, lived with them, you know, was nannying for Dia and Ron, and she's seen a lot and talked to a lot of those people, great people. And you just see kind of even their history and their struggle and different things, you know, where they've come from and how did they come into prominence. But I think it's even deeper than that, Joe, when he's talking about how the owners, it has to be black and all those things. I don't know if that's necessarily the fact. You look at the owner in Atlanta, he's given work done. Only player, 1% of the team, because of what work done stands for, helping single women that, you know, don't have a father figure, buying them a house. So he's giving them 1%. I think Reggie's spot on. The only thing that I think that kind of a little different than he saying, hey, these guys are white. I'll tell you right now, if Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees would have made this stance and said, I'm in this situation. I'm going to stand up for these people, and I'm going to kneel. But here's the reason why. And they went through, you know, Francis Scott Keys and told all the different backgrounds and really just spoke the language really well and said, hey, I'm going to stand up for those people. There would still be a lot of people that dislike them, but there would be a huge amount of people that would respect them and said, wow, let's get behind these guys' cause because these are people that we consider educators. Here's are people that are influenced. There are people that are influencers. If this was a Tom Brady standing up, doing what Collins did, but handle it a different way, and because who he is and what he represent, I guarantee you there would still be a huge amount of people that would say, Tom's right, we got to do this, we got to do certain things, and there would have been huge people, he would have had way more support than what a Colin getting.
What would happen if Russell Wilson did it?
I think that Russell would still be looked at a little different. No question, he'd be looked at. Cam Newton.
Because he's black.
Yeah, and Cam Newton, though.
It would be way worse.
Yes,
they present themselves differently, and that would lead to a different reaction. I think anyone listening knows exactly what I'm talking about and how people unfortunately would view that. But yeah, Cam carries himself a certain way, and as a result, Cam's subject to quite a bit of criticism.
And Russ probably would have the most leeway out of all the black quarterbacks.
Why is that?
Because I think that you look at his aura, how he is, kind of a little passive. People already say that he could be a...
Because he carries himself, can I say it? Because he carries himself a little bit more like a white quarterback does than, say, Cam Newton does. Am I off base saying
no,
that?
No, you're not. You're not. You're not at all, Joe. You're spot on. You called it like you see it.
Perception has just way too much to do with some of this, right?
Amen.
Perception just has way too much to do with this.
And it's perception based on all this media now that we have. Social media is 24/7. You've got multiple networks with their opinion head shows, sports talk radio from coast to coast. Everyone's coming out with their list, the most controversial quarterback, the best game manager, the most elite quarterback.
Right.
Everything is so compartmentalized and everything is compared to each other so much ad nauseum that these people do somehow become pigeonholed in their ways. I mean, we don't know Russell Wilson very well, but the way he comes across and the way the media portrays him and the way he portrays himself is a certain way, whereas Cam Newton does it another way.
You want to think that race might not have something to do with it. Think of it like this. Which quarterback has taken more criticism in his career, Cam Newton or Blaine Gabbert?
It's not even close.
Are they from the same draft class?
Not even close.
I think they're right next to each other. Because Gabbert's in that class that was Jake Locker and Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
And there were some other guys in that one as well. I don't. If Cam wasn't in that one, he may have been the year before. But they're right around. They have
you.
Roughly the same amount of years.
To what you're saying.
Accrued
right.
seasons, right?
Right.
Which quarterback has taken more criticism in his career? Cam Newton, who won a Heisman Trophy, a national championship, who went to a Super Bowl, who's been a league MVP, who's been to multiple Pro Bowls, or Blaine Gabbert, who's done none of that?
Throw
which quarterback's been criticized
in that too.
More?
Throw Andy Dalton there. Still would be Cam.
Okay.
Throw them all
yeah,
in
that's
there.
A fair one as well.
Yeah, and he's hasn't done half what Cam's done and had more weapons. So absolutely it's Cam.
He's right. I mean, without a doubt, you think about Blaine Gabbert and his career record and the fact that he got run out of the most lowly, sad organization outside of Cleveland in the National Football League, only to come to another one of the sad organizations and get benched. This guy should be criticized more than any player in pro football, yet it's Cam Newton. And I've been a guy very critical of Cam Newton, the way he over-celebrates his Superman and all his other histrionics. The guy's won. I mean, take last year out of it. When they had a bit of a down year, he's been pretty successful in the NFL.
Terry in Napa, thank you for calling the show. Michael Vick, Colin Kaepernick, your thoughts. Go ahead.
Hey, Joe Lo and Jez. Glad to have the band back together there. My feeling is, and this is more of a question, is that comparing Vick and Kaepernick, you got to take into account 2009 versus 2017. In 2009, Vick's style of play, I don't think, was completely understood. I think there was this idea that there could be more upside than had been seen in Atlanta. Maybe defenses hadn't figured it out. Whereas looking at Kaepernick's style of play, by this point, it's completely understood, and defenses scheme against it and take it away very effectively. I think that might be, to get away from the socio-political aspect, that might be part of the difference. I don't know what you guys thought.
That's a good phone call, Terry. We appreciate the thoughts. We appreciate the thoughts. We'll weigh back in on that. Plus more, and we've got Green Day tickets to give away at 8:45. But now, an opportunity to speak with a Super Bowl champion and the 1983 NFL MVP. You can follow him on Twitter at Theismann7. It's Joe Theismann with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Good morning, Joe. How's summer treating you?
It's treating me great, guys. How are you?
We're doing great, and it's always a pleasure to catch up with you. Thank you for your time this morning. We'll jump right into a quarterback situation that you're familiar with because, once again, it's making waves. Colin Kaepernick in the debate of what's keeping him out of the NFL. Is it his political protest or is it his play on the field? Michael Vick had some interesting comments recently suggesting perhaps Colin get a haircut and perhaps it's the performance on the field that's been hurting Colin's chances. Where do you land on the situation?
Well, I think in Colin's case, I think that certainly the stance that he took regarding the national anthem and the American flag certainly has, I think, affected a little bit of what the decisions might be regarding him getting a job. You have 32 owners out there that I think are concerned about what the repercussions might be if he is signed, and it's their prerogative. Just like it was his prerogative to do what he did, it's their prerogative to do what they do. And also, you know, there's 90 positions in the quarterback position in the National Football League. He certainly is better than some of those guys. I mean, he's not the 91st guy. So maybe his performances, you know, may not be that impressive, but he has a decent resume that under different circumstances, someone would probably give him a chance. But I do believe that it has to do with ownership being leery of what the repercussions might be based upon the stance that he took.
And you think it's based upon the stance and not necessarily based upon his look, because Michael Vick was saying that he should get a haircut and that would ostensibly solve the problem. Do you think that the protest is a separate thing completely from how he portrays himself?
His hair doesn't run and his hair doesn't throw. So, you know, as far as that goes, I think he has the right to express himself, to wear his hair the way he wants to. I don't think that has anything to do with the way things are turning out for him as we go forward.
Joe, your boy Lo Neal here. Looking forward to seeing you in Canton. You know, I'm introducing your boy LT.
Well, that's right.
Let's talk about a team that's close and dear to you, the Washington Redskins. Why weren't they able to get a deal done with Cousins?
Well, it's interesting that you asked the question, and this comes up so often. Why weren't the Washington Redskins able to get a deal with Kirk Cousins? Because Kirk Cousins didn't want a deal. That's the bottom line. I mean, it isn't. The Redskins made an offer on May 2nd with no response coming back whatsoever from Kirk's camp. Well, that has to tell you that he's not interested in doing a deal this year. What he wanted to do was he wants to play under the franchise tag. He wants to see what the suitors are going to look like next year. He wants to see what the Redskins are going to look like as a football team. Kirk is a very, very calculated, bright young man, and he analyzes situations completely. And it really didn't matter what the Redskins were going to offer. So it really isn't, you know, why didn't the Redskins get the deal done? In any negotiation like this, it takes two parties. It takes management and it takes the players' camp. And in this case, the players' camp wasn't willing to make a commitment because they didn't want to make an offer, and all of a sudden the Redskins say yes. I think he wanted to play the year out, and that's what he's going to get a chance to do.
Super Bowl champ Joe Theismann with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Fans in San Francisco keeping a very close eye on the Cousins situation, because if he is to hit the market next year, the thought process is that Kyle Shanahan and the Niners would want to make a serious play for Cousins. Fast forward a year, if Kirk has a good season, do you see Bruce Allen using the franchise tag for a third time, or do you think San Francisco is going to have what it takes to get the deal done?
Well, San Francisco is $63 million under the cap this year. You got to figure they'll be under the cap next year. You look at their quarterback situation, you certainly think that they're going to keep an eye on it. I don't know if they necessarily want to go draft someone. Defensively, I think they're going to be a pretty good football team. Offensively, obviously, it depends on how the quarterback plays. There's no question that anybody in their right mind is going to look at the situation and say San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan there would be number one as far as what, you know, you might consider Kirk having an opportunity and a place to go. There's also the transition tag that can be placed where the Redskins will have an opportunity to match any offer. So there are different options available to the Redskins as there are to Kirk at the end of this particular season.
Ezekiel Elliott's had himself quite a long offseason, Joe. What do the Cowboys do with this young player who is facing a possible suspension from the league and continues almost on the daily to pop up in more news headlines?
Well, you know, it's interesting reading what Jerry Jones had to say, which was nothing. When Jerry doesn't have a comment on a situation, you sort of have to look at it as very serious. I think that, you know, Zeke is a young man that's trying to figure out in life what it's all about. I mean, we live in a fishbowl. You do it. I mean, your personalities, where you go, what you do, the way you act, the people you hang out with. They're all reported in this day and age. I mean, everybody has a cell phone. Everybody has a way to record something. So, you know, you're really never alone unless you're by yourself in a room. And so in Ezekiel's situation, he has a responsibility to himself, to his family, to the Dallas Cowboys, to the National Football League. And you have to make smart decisions. You know, I'm convinced that guys that wind up getting suspended just don't like money. They just don't like money. I mean, you get a 4-game suspension in the NFL, it costs a lot of money. And it doesn't take much, I think, to be able to make some good decisions. But again, you're talking about young guys who you would hope be able to make better decisions than they do. And I don't know what the situation exactly is with Zeke. All I know is that he's a heck of a football player, and the Cowboys would be, you know, a little bit behind the eight ball without him.
Joe Theismann with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. A team the Raider fans are going to be keeping a very close eye on this season, as always, the Kansas City Chiefs. But the Chiefs, in my estimation, are going to have more struggles this year than we've seen in the past. Throw out the fact that it's a tricky schedule. Andy Reid and the organization trading up to bring in Patrick Mahomes. That could create a dicey situation with Alex Smith, coupled with the fact that they just fired their general manager less than a month before the start of camp. What do you make of the Chiefs this season?
Well, there's a lot of general managers that have sort of got by the wayside. You know, Carolina just got rid of theirs. Kansas City got rid of one. The Redskins got one just before the draft. I think they're finding out that, you know, there's other ways to be able to get things done. In the case of the Kansas City Chiefs, go back 2 years, you didn't have a wide receiver catch a touchdown pass. Last year, Alex Smith threw just 16 touchdown passes. They looked at Patrick Mahomes, and they probably looked at the 2018 draft, the 2019 draft, and felt like we're going to be in a very good position to be able not to draft real low. We're a good football team. So let's see if we can get a young guy in the fold now, bring him along. And I don't think it spells anything for Alex Smith. He's still going to be the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs for at least the next couple of years. So you start to bring somebody in that you can work into the system, let him learn about professional football, let him learn the way that you want to run the offense. And then if you need him to play, that's fine. But right now, I think it's a betting on the future by the Kansas City Chiefs more than a replacement for Alex.
He's the 1983 NFL MVP, Super Bowl champion. Follow him on Twitter at Theismann7. And quite frankly, every time I see a picture of the guy, he's got the greatest tan I have ever seen in my life. Joe, I don't know how you do it, but it's Joe Theismann with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Always a pleasure, Joe. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
I'm not screwing around. I'll take that tan any day of the week.
Yeah, seriously.
I wish I could tan like that. I would pay to tan like that.
I burn even indoors right now, Joe. I'm putting on sunscreen during the break here on the 12th floor of our indoor building, just in case I walk by a window and happen to get a couple sun rays. It's not funny. You try being a redhead for a while. You know, you got that perfect black that black skin, black don't crack, all that. You know, you over there laughing at me when I'm slathering up during the break.
When you're down in Vegas like you were in summertime covering the Summer League not too long ago, how long can you be outside without any lotion?
12 seconds.
Before you realize to yourself, this could get dangerous.
5 minutes.
5 minutes. The 5 minute mark, you'll start getting concerned.
At the 5 minute mark, I'm already thinking, especially about the top of my head, because I'm fairly recently balding. Shut up, Lo.
Didn't say anything.
It was preemptive. I saw you coming in over the top. I haven't been losing my hair for long. So now, Joe, when I go outside, super thin, it's the first thing the sun can get to. So when I'm outside of a place like Vegas, absolutely. Within just a couple minutes, I'm already feeling the burn.
I was going to ask you where you were more prone to burning. So head
skull.
Is, yeah.
Scalp.
Gotta be that,
yeah.
That dome.
That would be that dome. Damn that dome.
Green Day tickets at 8:45 and a conversation with 12-year NFL veteran Brian Baldinger coming up next. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Two Green Day tickets to give away in about 14 minutes at 8:45. Welcome back, Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. It is great to have you in this morning. As we turn our attention to a 12-year NFL veteran who's now a terrific analyst with the NFL Network, follow him on Twitter at BaldyNFL. It's Brian Baldinger with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Baldy, thank you so much for your time this morning. I ran into you a few times in the Philadelphia press box back in the day. I know you know Andy Reid, and I know you know how he runs his operations. What's your sense of the Kansas City Chiefs this season? They just fired their general manager. They traded up to draft a quarterback. Alex Smith suddenly finds himself on the hot seat. How dangerous is this team compared to years past?
I think it's a good team. I mean, it's a good roster. You know, I don't think that Alex Smith is going to be unseated this year. But, I mean, if you just look at, you know, if you look at the quarterback that they drafted from Texas Tech, I mean, I did a lot of his games over the years, and I talked to his coach, Cliff Kingsbury, this week in the Big 12 media days. I mean, Kansas City jumped up to number 10 to draft him because New Orleans was going to draft him at number 12. You know, and John Gruden in his quarterback search this past spring said he was the best quarterback, you know, in the entire draft. So, I mean, if you look at Andy Reid, Sean Payton, and John Gruden, and their assessment of them. I mean, I just think this is, you know, this is a pretty special player. I don't know when he's going to be ready, but I know he could play in a pro-style offense. He just didn't have to do that at Texas Tech. But I think Kansas City's in good shape. I can't speak to John Dorsey and his contract situation and what they did. I know this, between John and Andy, they've assembled a pretty good roster. You know, they did not play well in the first three quarters against Pittsburgh in the playoff loss. But they came back, you know, and made a heck of a game out of it. But I think Kansas City is, you know, is going to be right there competing for the AFC West just the way they did a year ago.
And do you think that it's the Raiders and Chiefs then in the division, with the Broncos being the big question mark because of their uncertainty at quarterback?
I think everybody's competitive in that division. I think San Diego's going to be good. They've quietly assembled a lot of really good players. I'm not making excuses for their records the last couple of years, but they've been awfully beat up, very injured at very key spots. If these two guards they drafted, Feeney and Lamp, can really play, the draft in the second, third round, if they can plug and play those guys at guard, they got a chance to be a really dynamic offense. And defensively, we saw what Joey Bosa was in the time that he played a year ago. Look at Melvin Ingram and, you know, the guys at Brandon Meebane and, you know, the guys they have up front. I think San Diego's going to compete, and I think Denver's going to compete. I mean, regardless who's at quarterback, that defense is still a championship-caliber defense. So, I don't know. I think the AFC West is going to be the most competitive division in the entire National Football League.
Baldy, I couldn't agree with you more. When you think about San Diego and you look at the Raiders, both those teams seem to have their quarterback. They know that they're going to be their quarterback. Alex Smith may be looking over his shoulder. Maybe he won't get replaced, but he knows that pressure is going to be there. Mm-hmm. Who, in your opinion, when you're talking about the quarterback, who in your opinion still who has the better quarterback in this conference? And when you're talking about San Diego competing, is there a threat that, you know, you can see San Diego competing for a playoff spot, or are you just saying just being able to compete in general?
Well, I mean, I think Derek Carr right now is obviously the hot rising quarterback in that division. He just got paid to be that. In his 3 years, all he's done so far is ascend in each year. And who knows, if he didn't get hurt last year, what San Diego or what Oakland would have done in that playoff loss. So, you know, Phillip Rivers is, you know as anybody, low. I mean, that guy is a stud. And when he's protected and he's got his weapons, he can be as dangerous as anybody. And, you know, I expect him to throw 30-plus touchdown passes this year. Hunter Henry's the real deal. When I say compete, I'm saying this is a heavily competitive division, top to bottom. I don't know that anybody's going to get a 12-4 record this year. We saw both Kansas City and Oakland achieve 12-4 records a year ago, but I don't know that anybody's going to be 12-4. I think it's going to be dog-eat-dog, you know, in the AFC West. And so I don't know what's going to win it. I don't know who's going to win it. I just know that San Diego is going to be a player in that division all the way to the end.
The NFL Network's Brian Baldinger joining Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Baldy, this show, we have yet to be able to refer to the Chargers as Los Angeles. We notice you're still having that struggle as well. We've given ourselves an over-under of week one. Do you think by week one you'll be calling them L.A.?
You know, maybe I'll be calling the Carson, you know. I hope that's the last time I ever do it. I hope so.
But good luck. We're getting killed.
I have the same problem in St. Louis and in other places as well. So we'll get it out of the system before long.
Speaking of something the rest of the AFC would like to get out of the system, the New England Patriots' stranglehold on the conference, many feel, will continue this year. At some point, Tom Brady's play has to fall off. At some point, this team needs to take a step back. Is there any reason to believe that this year is that year?
No reason. They returned the same five starting offensive linemen that started, you know, 19 games a year ago. Tom Brady, in the second half of that Super Bowl, was as good as he's ever been. He's going to turn 40 on August 3rd. I don't see any reason why. I mean, I know these drop-offs will happen. Look, they happen to everybody, but I haven't seen any signs that it's happening. His mind is as agile and sharp as ever. His arm is as strong as ever. Whatever receiver that he throws to seems to be the open receiver. They won a Super Bowl without Gronkowski. We know what they've done in a trade this past off season with Cook. So I don't know what the offense is even going to look like this year. It may be completely different. You know, I mean, like Derek Blunt scored 18 touchdowns for him last year and he wasn't re-signed. So it's going to look different, but they're still the team to beat by a long shot. I don't, you know, Miami is getting better and we'll see what Buffalo does. All the other teams do is just, you know, constantly change at every single level. Like the quarterback, the coach, the general manager, they all change trying to catch them, but they still have a stranglehold in this division. They're still a team to beat in that division. They're still a team to beat in the AFC right now.
Baldy, there's a division in me that kind of reminds me of the, you talked about, you alluded to the Raiders and Denver, how that division is so tough. How about another division when you look at Tennessee, comparable to the Raiders? You look at the Texans, they got that great defense, kind of probably would be the Denver Broncos. San Diego would be comparable to the Colts. I think this is another tough division. Maybe the competition is not as tough, but can you see Tennessee Titans now to making the turn and pushing as a playoff team as well?
I can see them pushing it, yeah. I mean, they were, you know, 9-7 last year. And, you know, they went to Kansas City at 9-0, and they won a game against a good team there. And that convinced me that they were, you know, playoff tough. You know, they faltered against Jacksonville the next week, and they lost their balance at the end, and Houston won it. But they're going to be tough, and Houston's going to be good. We'll see what happens at quarterback. Yeah, obviously, that's the question mark. You know, I think Indianapolis is a team that you got to look at. They've upgraded their defense. There's no question about it. Andrew Luck, you know, he had the offseason shoulder surgery, so we got to see just when he's healthy and how healthy he is. You know, and Jacksonville is just a big question mark because, you know, they've picked in the top five for six straight years in a row. I mean, it's almost unprecedented that you could constantly pick that high. Eventually, the talent, you know, with Doug Marrone and, you know, Tom Coughlin there, eventually it's going to kick in because talent does win in this league. And so eventually they're going to start winning more than three or four games a year. Now, whether it's going to be this year or not, I don't know, but it's a highly competitive division. You're right, Lo. I mean, this is a good division, a division that's getting better. They drafted really, really high. A lot of those teams over, you know, a long period of time, they've got their quarterbacks in place, except maybe Jacksonville. They've got a lot of surrounding talent around them. So we'll see if somebody can really, you know, take a stranglehold in that division. Nobody really has done that, even though, you know, Houston seems to have dominated that division in recent years.
Dallas Cowboys making headlines for all the wrong reasons. Ezekiel Elliott finding trouble virtually every day this week with new stories popping up. How much will these distractions hurt and maybe a regression to the mean for the quarterback in Dallas?
I don't know. I mean, there's no reason. I mean, here on July, you know, 19th or whatever it is, no reason to think that Dak Prescott is going to regress. The guy from the day that he stepped on the field in the L.A. Coliseum against the Rams last year and took the team down the field and threw a touchdown pass to Dez Bryant, never looked back. I mean, he was a stud in every way. Quarterback rating of 105 and 21 touchdowns, only four, you know, interceptions. I mean, I don't know why he would step back. I guess the only reason why people might think that is because he was just so darn good as a rookie. And the only way to go when you play that well maybe is down. But I don't see a reason why he's going to go backwards. The team around him is special. Now, the running back, I was just at the Star yesterday, took a tour of the facility. It's something else now. It's part museum. It's part Hall of Fame. It's part shrine to Jerry. It's got his helicopter right down there at the 50-yard line. I mean, it's something to see. I don't know what to make out of Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, he knows that in Dallas, even after only a year, everybody's under the microscope. Who's ever played on that team is under the microscope. You know, I hope what is reported to have happened didn't happen. I just hope that for his sake. But I just believe that he's going to play a lot this year. I don't know if he's going to get suspended or not. I know Darren McFadden had 1,000 yards a year before. If he misses game, McFadden's going to step in there. And I know that they're a better team with Zeke in there, but they're still going to be a good team, even if he misses some games this year.
12-year NFL veteran, now a terrific analyst with the NFL Network. Follow him on Twitter at BaldyNFL. It's Brian Baldinger with Joe Lowndes on 95.7 The Game. Thanks for your time this morning, Baldy. Great stuff as always, and we look forward to doing it again soon.
Thanks. I'll see you in a couple of weeks in Canton there, Lo.
Absolutely. See you in Canton, buddy.
Right, take care.
We're there.
There we go. See you in Canton.
Is Canton, everybody going to be there? Like, literally everyone who ever was affiliated with the NFL?
No, not everyone was affiliated. Just the who's who in the National Football League, Joe. And it's a great event. So you're going to be that newcomer. I'll take plenty of pictures. And, you know, I wish you guys were going with me. It'd be great. But definitely take a lot of great pictures. I'm excited about going down.
Is this considered one of those things that if you're, like, in NFL circles, this is one of those events you go to network? Like, the Combine's one of those events for a lot of people in the media. You got to make sure you're there. Is this one of those as well?
It really is. I mean, it starts pretty much on Tuesday, but, you know, I'm not going to get in until Thursday. Wanted to make sure I didn't leave you guys for ample amount of time. So, doing that, the big fella's taking off a day of training camp. The coach allowed him to leave Purdue, so he's going to fly down as well. So, you know, we suited and booted together, me and my son, beautiful wife. So, real excited about the opportunity to be able to present the great LaDainian Tomlinson at the Hall of Fame.
Poor D if she gets stuck in a seat in between the two of you.
She's a little smaller than you, though.
She's
Joe.
A lot she's, smaller. She's... Still.
Yeah.
I mean, well, unless you're the width of a piece of paper, you're still in trouble.
And I'm sorry, Joe, real quick, that just led me, hearing you say that, it led me to I have to ask the question of whether or not in your presentation that you'll lead into LT on an up note.
Without
that'd
a doubt.
That'd be a great nod to us, wouldn't it, if he just, let's bring him out. My good friend, LaDainian Tomlinson.
I would bust up laughing.
Oh, it'd be so great. No one in the country would know, but it'd be an inside shout out to those of us here at 95.7 The Game.
It's this bit again, isn't it?
Well, no, just
hey, that's him, Joe.
Just in light of his Hall of Fame speech, I'm not trying to drag us all back into that muck, but I just was wondering if he would do that in Canton.
Let's give away some Green Day tickets. Joe, Lo, and Dibs coming up next, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Joe, Lo, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Let's go ahead and give away some Green Day tickets. Two of them, in fact. For their show at the Oakland Coliseum on Saturday, August 5th. Tickets available now at Ticketmaster.com. That's Ticketmaster.com. 888-957-9570. First person to answer the following question correctly wins the tickets. Which Green Day album sold over 10 million copies in the United States? 888-957-9570. Which Green Day album? They're not a... It's not Kawakami at the Athletic. Which Green Day album sold over 10 million copies in the United States? 888-957-9570. Big things happening on the tech front here in the Bay Area. Congratulations to Tim and Marcus Thompson, both leaving Bay Area News Group to start a new venture. A lot of other individuals we've come across in our existence. They've got something getting ready to launch, so that'll be very fun to keep an eye on as we move forward. Question. NBA's Adam Silver, the commissioner, thinks legalized sports betting is going to happen soon. Where do you two land on that? Are you in favor of that, Dibs?
Legalized sports gambling, yes, I am in favor of it. I think we've reached a point where you can gamble online ad nauseum, whether it's offshore or onshore. There's been people who've had bookies going back to the days when my dad was in his 20s or 30s. He wasn't a big gambler, but friends of hers were actually in the bookie business. So to think that this is not something that is widespread already is foolish. So why not give states a piece of the action? I know the Supreme Court is currently hearing New Jersey's case, a decision not expected until, I believe, early spring of next year. Once that big tumbler comes down, the Supreme Court weighs in yay or nay, that's going to determine the fate of a lot of this.
Do you lump sports betting together with online poker, for example?
Yes.
So if I were to say legalized gambling, referring to sports betting and poker, you're in favor of both?
Yes, and I think even daily fantasy to me is the same thing. That's gambling. That's, to me, it's not fantasy sports as much as it is gambling. Fantasy sports is gambling. Put it all under the same umbrella. Use these racetracks that we have here today. Golden Gate Fields, for example.
Oh, Sundays.
Beautiful
dollar dogs,
facility.
Dollar beers.
But they don't...
Did I say that out loud?
Yeah, you can. They're a sponsor of us.
Very excited about them.
Love Golden Gate Fields. But you look at the facility, and they only use about 80% of it because the crowds aren't what they used to. If you had 100 slot machines and maybe even a small sports book, while gambling for some is a problem, for others, it's great entertainment, and it would draw more people to that entertainment venue.
See, I agree with you on daily fantasy and fantasy in general, but the distinction between the two is that fantasy has been labeled a game of skill, whereas sports betting is labeled a game of chance. And that's the key distinction between legalization and being illegal. Whether it's a game of skill, which is what fantasy has been deemed to be, versus sports betting, which is a game of chance. Now, anyone who's ever tried to make a living or make a run at sports betting understands it is very much a game of skill. It requires an extraordinary amount of skill in order to succeed at it. But that's just not how the definition fell when that came out. Lo, your thoughts. Legalization of sports betting, lumping it in with poker. For it or against it?
I'm for it. I think that the biggest thing that people have to realize, your athletes aren't supposed to gamble. They probably won't be gambling, and they shouldn't be gambling on themselves. And I get that, how that works, but it happens all the time. Now, I think the NBA and the NFL, they already give out odds. They already let Vegas know certain things. Why would you not now be able to capitalize on that and do some type of revenue split share with gambling and legalizing it? Because it's going to help their bottom line. So I can see this thing happen. Adam Silver is, you know, forward thinking.
Does it worry you at all that piece by piece, every few years, we move the line back a little bit from where it was? That one year we're legalizing marijuana, and then a few years later, we're going to be legalizing sports betting and online poker. And then we're talking about here in the city taking the closing time for bars at 2 o'clock and moving it to 4 o'clock. All individually, not necessarily viewed as horrible instances. But when you start to lump all of this together, does it worry you about the future of America that we continue to push what were at one time considered the lines of decency back further and further? This isn't me necessarily making a case for or against. It's just having a conversation about what I think is something that could be viewed as very important by many people.
Well, I think, Joe, you're being very deep, and not just deep, but philosophical. And you talked about with kids and cell phones and all the different things you talked about, and then we ended up getting a book out of it because it was something that you just talked about. And I think you're right. I think there's a one book, Dibs, and it talks about we'll call good bad and bad good. And because we are pushing things and boundaries, it's coming to that where's the balance? And I don't know how to draw it and how to separate it. You got to make sure that you keep your values and morals in check. If not, the pendulum is continuing to swing, dude.
The biggest problems in this country have nothing to do with marijuana or sports gambling. It's our gun problem and our problem with racism. And if you can come up with ways to address those two problems, then you can really exact, you know, a positive toll on America, because whether or not people are getting high, it's not increasing the murder rate via guns. It's not increasing or decreasing the unemployment rate. Now, sports gambling, that's a whole separate issue. But I would argue that people who want to gamble on sports are gambling on sports. Take someone like myself, for example, not a huge gambler. When I go to legal gambling establishments, I might get a little bit of action, but I don't seek it out on my own. So making it legalized is not going to move me in that direction anymore. I'm not predisposed to do it. It doesn't interest me that much. Now, if there was a place like Golden Gate Fields, for example, where I could go get action, sure, I'd bet more than I do otherwise, but I don't think it's going to lead to an absolute deterioration of American society.
But what about the idea that you, as an individual, may have some discipline and self-control, but if you create an opportunity for people to legally get high, legally bet on sports, legally play poker, stay out until 4 a.m. rather than 2 a.m. drinking, things of that nature, you throw all of this out there, all these opportunities.
For addictive personalities.
We are not a society of disciplined, organized people. You may be, Lo, you may be, but that's not everyone. There are individuals that are going to see this and say, I'll give it a try. I've never bet on a game before. Now I can do it legally. I'll go give it a try. You get hooked, that's a problem. You know, you even take half of 1% of people. What is that? Almost a million in this country? Just shy of a million? That's significant.
It is.
That's significant. That's where you have to worry about the lines, because it's easy to sit here and say, yes, legalize sports betting. I've said it. It's easy to sit here and say, yes, legalize marijuana. But it all adds up very quickly. It goes back to the conversation we had about the phones. Do you believe you have an addiction to your phone?
I believe I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Did you ever see that coming?
No.
One day, we're having this conversation right now about whether or not you are addicted to a phone. Step back for a moment and ask yourself, when you were 15 years old, if you thought you would ever be addicted to a phone. Dibs, when you were 10 years old growing up, did you ever think you would be addicted to a cell phone?
We didn't have phones, Joe, back then. We had carrier pigeons back in my day.
Yeah.
But no, to be honest, we had the phone where you had the one phone in the kitchen with the 50-foot cord.
Yep.
So if you got a call, you answered it in the kitchen, and you
walk
three rooms away, and then you shut the door, and the cord would be stretching all the way across the house.
Exactly.
So, of course not. I never thought that I'd be addicted to my phone. And, you know, hearing
Do you feel you are, though, now?
I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that, because the answer I'm going to give you is not the truth. So if you wouldn't mind me lying to you, I'll say, no, Joe, I'm not addicted to my phone. God, no. But hearing Lowe and looking at Lowe's face, and then I thought for just a moment, like, what would I, you know, if I was to get rid of my phone for a week, let's say, 1 week, no phone, how would I do it? How would I manage? And to even have those thoughts and that minor moment of panic, it's a sad feeling, Joe. So I think I do have a problem.
I tried waves of it last week on vacation. We rented the house up in Wine Country.
Waves?
And that was the whole goal. The whole goal was just, we're not going to board the dog. We're going to take the cat. Although I probably shouldn't say that out loud because we weren't supposed to take the cat. But we had those two. We had the kid. We didn't want to put him on a plane. So the thought process months ago was, let's do a vacation during All-Star Week. We'll stay local so we can bring the entire family.
Right.
And we'll just get a house and we'll chill by a pool. Right? That was the goal. Soon as we got there, I kept the phone off me. I didn't want to carry it around. I was just going to leave it in a room and see how long I could go. It wasn't like an active test. It was just, this is family time. I'm away from work. Really, no one needs to get at me right now. Now, Wednesday, when the in-laws and my parents came in, you have the phone because you know someone's going to call.
Right.
Inevitably, they're old. They're not going to follow their MapQuest correctly,
right.
And there's
going
to be a whole problem with the trip tick and the maps they use. But I was able to go, you know, 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
But to feel good about that made me feel sick.
Yeah.
Like that,
yes.
Hey, honey, Nikki, what? I haven't looked at my phone for 5 hours.
Right,
oh,
right,
my
right.
God. She's like, that's... I haven't seen that since the whole time I've known you. Yeah, I did good, right? I did real good.
Joe.
It's like, what the hell's wrong with you,
man?
It's a Sunday.
Joe, but you're right. And here's what I realized with myself. I don't have to be Twitter, Bleacher Report. I don't have those things to survive in this world. Me, it's like, I'm addicted because of the things or the thing that I do, you know, outside of here. And it's like, okay, if I don't have it, what am I going to not necessarily miss, but what can I take care of, which is cause an addiction? Take, for instance, I have my nephews, and they're in town. And I'm able to talk to these guys on a level that their moms don't. My sister lost her husband, so I'm able to talk to them on a level that you're not able to talk as a woman to your son. And growing up with us, Dibs, you know this, watching adult movies or something, that wasn't at our fingertips. You went to a Blockbuster and they had the sheets up there, and if people walked in that room, you're like, oh, they're bad. You know what I mean? It was just,
what's Blockbuster?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
And so, but you know, as I digest, or we had to go find a magazine. Now, believe it or not, so no, I'm keeping it real.
I know. I appreciate that.
And I was like so far removed from what these kids in seventh and eighth grade are doing. I'm like, dude, I was doing that till like college or my senior year, and I was like, what are you guys doing? And I'm like, you can't. And it's hard to tell them you can't. But what they have on that cell phone, Joe, when you're talking about addiction, and what our kids are exposed to because of the fact they can go on Google and see certain things, because you got to keep them, you don't want to keep them blocked from anything. It absolutely blow your mind, the things that they're at their fingertips.
From the 415, I left my phone alone for a week last year. You know what happened during that time? Kevin Durant signed with the Warriors, and I missed it for 3 days. Yeah, you gotta stay on that phone.
That's right. Speaking of which, I got some words with friends turns I got to take, so we should probably dip
that
to break.
A hot take.
If anyone wants to weigh in, 888-957-9570. We got another big question to ask from a baseball perspective. That's coming up in a minute. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.